Inseparable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
Oh, Carol, you make me laugh.
I do.
Welcome, admirable friends. My wife has been acting out the... When Serena talks and the introduction shows, she's playing
like an
orchestra.
I'm animated and I put actions into her words as if I were saying it. And
if you could see us in our studio right now,
that's
folks, you'd be surprised.
And you're
anyways,
laughing away,
and
you're trying to pull it all together as she finishes the last thing.
Welcome, and we've got Alex in our...
we do.
Hello.
Happy Tuesday to our admirable friends, and welcome to Alex.
Back to back, popular demand. Big demand for Alex. Last time he was on the show, people loved
Stop
him.
It.
Said they.
Bring Alex
back. No, honestly,
back.
They did. They really did.
Bring Alex back. That
Bring
was the
Alex
chance.
Back.
I'm happy to be here.
They want some young. How old are you, Alex?
30.
30 years old.
30
he brings
old.
Youth and maturity beyond his years, and he's in the business of offering coaching services, which is kind of related to what we're doing here. So, ex-athlete. But tonight, Carol, it's on excess and restraint.
It is.
This
excess
is a,
and restraint.
This is a big one. You know, we could instead of saying excess and restraint, we could have said addiction and restraint.
Mm.
You know, as the opposing. But we're going to stick with excess as a softer word. But in essence, we're trying to look at both ends of the spectrum of when we overuse our desires or misuse them. And then when we restrain them. You know, it's an interesting thing that restraint is one of the hardest things I think we have to deal with in our society. You know, there's this overriding notion that we can have it all.
It does require a little bit more wherewithal to make that choice.
Yeah. But I also think, like everything else, down deep, we know that there is a bit of a trade. And it's not that we're trying to give up restraint and or to give something up and go to pain instead of pleasure. It's just we're trying to selectively pick our pleasures.
Yes.
That's what we got to kind of think of when we think restraint. This is not a show on pain. This is a show on selectively deciding what pleasures make most sense to us. And that's why I think in the context of the overall practice of working on the 10 ideal mind qualities, the thing they all have in common is they're all the inner side of our being.
Mm-hmm.
We're working on the inner. And if you think about the idea of saying no to some outer conditions and yes to some inner conditions, the whole practice is about restraint when you look at it that way. You're restraining some things that from the outer. Because our sense doors, you know, is what's really pulling us to everything. And in today with technology...
Yeah, I really like this the topic this week because I really think when you look at the overall 10 qualities, it's at this point that we kind of begin to take a turn, and then the last two qualities that come after this week are calming qualities, which I consider kind of the sugar, the candy, the reward at the end. And so these qualities are kind of that last push through till... you can open up the door for some really
generosity.
Great things.
Like, it's really giving of
well,
ourselves.
The patience and composure, which I find is invaluable in any circumstance. So the restraint and excess working with those expands the capacity to allow composure and patience to kind of creep in. So I like this one because I think it's the meat and kind of allows you to go through a door to some really good stuff.
It seems like it is like the rock going up the hill. You get right to the top with this one, and then it's
mm-hmm.
like...
Well, if you think about it, the last one is calming quality. So we get to the final pinnacle is equanimity. It's a balancing act. So when we start restraining, we start bringing that guitar string into balance, don't we? It's a little
mm-hmm.
too tight, and you know, we begin laying back on it.
You see why it is called, why it's considered a letting go quality, because you're going to have to let it go in order to get to the calm
side.
That's
what I said at the beginning. You can't have it all. We all know that. And so we got to get to it. We got to roll up our sleeves. I mean, you especially, Alex, as an ex-professional athlete, and Carol, you for training for the Ragnar Relay this weekend. Restraint should be something you guys are well aware as you're in your training.
Mm-hmm.
So... Anyways, before we get so far into the body of the show, I'd like to go through the gratitudes. Which one of you two want to start?
Oh, we'll let our guest go first.
As I was gesturing my hand to her, she threw words. Words do overrule on radio, I guess. Well, having you two here, my gratitude today is actually for the two of you, for my parents. This week and last week has kind of been testing for me as a parent, and has allowed me to really kind of sit back and look at the role of being a parent and also being a child to a parent. And sitting back and being, you know, almost in awe sometimes of what my parents must have been going through with me, and really sitting down and thinking almost, what would they do in this sort of scenario? Because I happen to think that I've turned out okay. And I happen to think that that is largely due to the environment and to the care that that was given to me during much of my life and is still being given to me. So I'm very grateful to have had parents that were conscious of their role in their child's life and willing to make sacrifices to create something better for somebody else.
Wow.
Follow that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, boy, silly me for throwing it to you first. What a hard act to follow. I don't think I'm going to do anything. I'm going to just let it sit right there, and that'll be it.
That's part of learning how to receive. You take the grant. You take the
gift. It is. That was lovely.
You just tossed our way and say thank you. Every bit of it's true. No.
And humble, too.
Go ahead.
Okay. So I am grateful to a coworker today who exhibited an admirable friend quality.
Good.
And I just really was grateful for the act of, do I have to go through what she did to?
No, you don't have to, unless you wanted to talk about the lesson learned from it.
But she exhibited one, and I noticed, and I just was really grateful. Because actually, this could play into the restraint part, and I can bring it up later on. It's like a twofer on this one. So leave the mystery going.
Okay. I'm grateful, actually, to our oldest son, AJ, today. And what brought me to think about that was my trip down to the monastery this morning and going back, I don't know how many years ago, that AJ first introduced us to the monastery and sent us down and said, Mom and Dad, I think this is the kind of training you guys would like. I know you're Catholic, but this is an adjunct training and something that that you might like. So as I met with Sister Twin Chow and we had tea together and talked about the history and what brought us to the center and what we learned, and I was expressing my gratitudes to her and how that they played such a major role in shifting our life. I thought back and said, you know, if it wasn't for AJ bringing this whole issue up.
That's true.
None of us would have been able to be exposed to these teachings that we learned from the East as a way to supplement our Western training, both in psychology as well as in religion. So, you know, one thing I want to make a point is that we've got the online chat with bbsradio.com/admirablefriends. But also, any of you out there that have not yet subscribed to admirablefriends.org, It is a free subscription, and you get a whole bunch of stuff, including your personal journal that includes these gratitudes. And we just released the gratitude section, and I just want to kind of go through it because it's kind of neat how it says the action. So it's got an area to type in called the action, and it says recognizing and learning from the kind actions of others, who the person was. And then there's two little checkbox saying, I trust their motives and I know they went out of their way. Then it says the lesson learned. And then that I want to keep this gratitude personal or do I want to share it with the network? So that's something that you can record as many of these as you like. Come back and look at them. Look at other people's gratitudes. And it's a new functional system. Again, it's all free subscription. So
I think you and I were talking about the system the other day, and what I really found valuable about the system was that if you're looking to implement something daily, and not to make these huge changes, but just somewhere to go where you can spend 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and really work on those inner qualities and direct things back at you, you just literally have to log in, and everything you do within there really directs it back to you. So literally a minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes spent in the site is great and is something everybody should experience. So kudos to you.
Well, I'll tell you, I wasn't with Sister Tantwe this morning for 5 minutes. What did she ask me? What do you think she asked me after 5 minutes? How's your practice going?
Of course.
Right? So how's your practice? Meaning, what are you doing? Right, we learned a lot of concepts from the nuns when we started training with them, but most importantly, she knows that you have to practice those concepts,
mm-hmm.
and that means what are you doing day in and day out? Things like writing in your journal, writing your gratitudes, going through your addictions and stresses, laying that stuff out, writing it out, talking with admirable friends. Meditating as an option, if those of you that choose to meditate or contemplate prayer or seek alone time, that's all part of the practice. And I think so much we forget because we're so used to reading a book and think we understand something, when in fact that's no different than picking up a map of Dallas and reading the map and thinking you know the streets of Dallas, whereas you'd know the streets if you drove the streets of Dallas. The map was obviously helpful, but knowing the streets is a function of driving the streets. So I wasn't there 5 minutes, and she says, how's your practice going? It's just, and I'm glad we have the system. And for those of you, it's there. You know, it's there. Of course, all the concepts and all the shows are online and all kinds of library information and things you can read. But most importantly, there's your journal, the heart of your actions and what you're doing every day that's recording.
It is a cool resource to have.
Yeah.
It's nice, and like Alex said, it's there. You can log on. And if you're looking for personal empowerment and self-development, there's a lot of leverage points there.
But I think most importantly, Carol, in the context of Admirable Friends, it's there that we can discuss with others. Everything we post is to everyone or to ourselves. We can talk about gratitudes like we do here in the show. I mean, if we didn't, just take ourselves out of that. Would you really practice alone?
What I like about it is that it frames, really, the discussion of the journal. You know, otherwise, I feel there's a difference between almost like a diary and a journal. A diary's kind of open-ended.
Right.
Let me open
blank
it up.
Blank piece of paper. Write
a
it
blank
out.
Piece of paper.
A
let me just kind of memory
dump
or thought dump and just kind of let it all fly on the paper. Whereas the journal actually just kind of puts some scope to it and says, let's just keep you within these guidelines here. And let's just stay in this channel and continue to work on this way.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that, it really allows you to say, hey, this isn't such a tedious thing. You know, it's framed for me. I go through it. You know, I get to feel that feeling of I've done something to value my inner qualities. And then you can go about your day. So it really is a nice piece of work. I feel like I've shortcut the system because someone had to go through the tough work of doing that and putting it together. And actually that action of laying out what should the scope of the journaling be. So to allow someone like myself to simply go in there and use it for my own benefit.
Well, it's a tool, and like I said, it's also there for the Admirable Friendship Group, which is going to be even more powerful the more networking we have, and the more we can grow the Admirable Friends grouping, the more we can share.
And I think maybe what we should add is that for those that are using the journal and are starting to use this gratitude thing, filling out the pages, let us know how it's going.
Yeah.
You know, feedback is great. That's the only way we're going to know, how it works for them and what the points are that they feel is working, pros and cons, I mean, I think that's valuable.
Well, we'll get back to that journal, because restraint and deciding, how to restrain and what desires or pleasures we want to pick is really part of working through that journal.
It so plays in perfectly.
We'll circle back
it sets
to that.
Itself up.
We'll circle back to our personal stories relating to how we, the way we framed tonight's discussion was really asking, and anyone at all that wants to type in their story, live chat, or send us an email to hello@admirablefriends.org, we're going to be asking, where have we exercised restraint in our life? Where's the excess? In other words, where we had too much that's caused stress in our life, and how or do we apply the quality of restraint to practicing self-development? That'll be the second half hour. In the first half hour, we're going to try to do a little bit of education. Alex, I'd like you to chime in wherever you can, too, besides Mom and I just going through Mom and I, Carol and I.
We're the same.
You're the same person.
I am.
Yeah. Just going through this... educationally, we're going to kind of recap this. So, Carol, I'd like you to read the definition.
Yes.
Of restraint.
Yes, and restraint, once again, is part of the letting go quality. Alex mentioned that before. And the definition is the ability to choose under control or within limits. Skillful restraint involves trading unnecessary external sensory pleasures for internal sensory pleasures.
Love it.
That's a mouthful. And we're going to be able to define the externals and the internals. But it's a trade.
Yes.
And it's not, we're not giving up pleasure for the sake of pain. That's
no.
not what this program is about. It's about skillfully trading pleasures. And in particular, getting more grounded with our inner self. Right? That's what self-development all is getting more grounded with our inner self and more secure in our choices about ourselves so we can withstand all the storms of the day as they come about. And certainly if we're caught up on the storms of wanting this and wanting that and texting this and texting that, we can see how it would be very difficult to live less stressful. It would only add stress. So what are we restraining from? We're not talking about unhealthy relationships or a controlling mind, because quite frankly, that's a psychotherapist can help you in those areas. By now, hopefully, we're out of the unhealthy relationships or the controlling mind state. In the context, we're talking about restraining from our attachment to sensual pleasures, not necessarily the beauties of the world. And we'll talk a little bit more about the difference between the passion for those pleasures and the pleasures themselves. With each pleasure, there is a desire for pleasure and some level of enjoyment for when the pleasure arrives. These are two separate issues. Okay, so what we want to do is we want to break down the actual, to use the term craving, the wanting of the pleasure before it arrives. So you're wanting that Amazon package to arrive, and then the actual clinging or the connecting with the Amazon package when it comes. In particular, the pleasure that we're trying to zero in on, the addictive one, the one that's got us kind of on the hook, is that earlier craving, that wanting, that underground, kind of a underground tone, almost like an ocean.
An undertow that kind of pulls
you without really recognizing it. Does that make sense to you guys? The craving side is?
Yes.
Versus the clinging itself? The clinging would be the object of the pleasure, I like this or don't, the actual attachment to the pleasure itself. But the passion is more associated with that craving. And that's the hidden thing. If you look in our journal, Carol, when we ask for that allure, that's what we're trying to get to.
Right.
You know, we're trying to get to that craving underneath. And, you know, the funny thing is anybody got ideas of why it's so hard to find that allure sometimes? It's not so obvious to us. Why are our allures or our cravings not obvious to us? The real motivation or the intention behind what it is we want. Why is that so elusive?
Well, if it's pleasure we're looking for, we'll deny, won't we deny anything so that we can keep it?
Yeah.
To an extent?
Do you think there's a certain amount of shame associated with that pleasure is why it's gone underground on us?
Well, to some extent.
It's hard to kind of bring it up and bubble it up. There are certain, I know when I fill out that journal, there's certain things that are, you know, I know when you decide to whether you're going to share it with somebody or not, you start thinking about it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like, you know, when little kids go to cover their face and they put their hands over, but their fingers are apart, you know, it's kind of like, you kind of don't want to look, but
and this
hard.
Is where these mind qualities all work together. That authenticity and being, you know, honest about your intentions directly relates to digging these cravings out and identifying what is the allure of the action. Because whether you're aware of it or not, our cravings are what creates the stress for us. The unskillful cravings is what creates the stress. So we have to kind of back in from the stress. Something doesn't feel right here in our life, or there's some particular activity that's not working well. You write that down first, and then after you do that, the stress you mentioned, you have to say, well, what's the allure? And then on a seesaw, you kind of compare that to the drawback. So you're actually measuring up the allure and the drawbacks before you ever get to the solution, which is going to be the alternate pleasure.
I've often found my craving is the result of much conditioning up to that point, that I've kind of worked it up to a point of where it's, I need it, I need it, I need it. You almost get itchy for it, you know,
yeah.
And then you
Well, did you see that? Did you happen to, Kate gave us a link to that video.
I saw that.
Okay, well, they've got the brain figured out that we are pretty easily addicted our senses.
You know,
it's part of the brain and the way it's made up. And they were talking about the primates in the past and how it is doing it. And they had some, at the end, thanks, Kate, for sharing that with us. But it was kind of demeaning when you looked at that video, because it made us feel like we're victims of almost like Pavlovian dogs.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking the same thing.
We have very little control over our choices. And I noticed at the end, the scientists were giving some solutions as to how to reduce the craving, because they had children there that were told that here's one cotton candy, mm-hmm. and if you can stop from eating it for 15 minutes, we're going to give you three. And only a couple of the kids restrained, you know, the far majority went. And they had parents with their cell phones, they pulled their cell phones away, and they told them that they couldn't touch their cell phones, they were there for an interview. But they had them write their cell phone number down, and then they rang the cell phones during the
recording. Or texted so that they would purposely.
The parents didn't hold up any better than the kids did with the
cotton candy,
okay? So, but I noticed all the tips by the scientists had to do with look the other way, conventional kinds of ways to not give in to temptations or not give in to addictions that could be avoided. But none of them talked about developing an alternative pleasure, an inner mind quality, and getting secure in other pleasures. You know, the pleasure of being alone, the pleasure of being with loved ones, the pleasure of being present with loved ones, you know, being like we were this weekend camping. I mean, none of that was mentioned as an alternative.
And I call this, and it's probably, I've mentioned it before, the self-pacifying quality.
Yes.
Because you need to learn how to self-pacify and not look towards the external gratification for that feeling of pleasure.
But you can see with the phones ringing, the iPads now, the laptops, having Wi-Fi everywhere, every coffee shop. I mean, there is a reason to be addicted to this technology every moment of the day. So if you don't cultivate that quiet time as an alternative where you can reflect on the inner pleasures, you've got no chance. It was kind of a depressing video.
You know, what I see when I look at these qualities a lot of times in my own practice is it's a lot of the accelerator and the brake, the two pedals, and knowing when to show some restraint, you know, and they kind of come together.
That's that discernment.
Typically, when there's excess, it's like time to turn on a little bit of restraint and get you back to that, you know, that, what did they say, moderation and everything is really.
But you know, when you're so caught up, though, Alex, in your addictions, sometimes you don't have that balance to make that choice.
Well, that's where I go back and I say, what is the one stress test that I can put on a situation to determine whether or not restraint is necessary? And that's where I go back and I say, is it causing stress to me or to others?
Right, but I'm saying, what state of mind is able to ask that question? As the video shows, when we're totally encumbered, I mean, these parents could not stop, and they jumped at the phone. They were told the part of the drill was not to touch the phone, and they jumped at the phone. You saw
actually,
video.
There was money attached to it, if
yes,
I'm not mistaken.
And they lost
said,
it.
You know, you'll get paid by not
so
jumping
you're making
at the
a logical
phone.
Deduction. What I'm asking you is what is it we have to develop to be able to make
space.
That choice?
Space.
Space, yeah.
You know, they always say
before
you make a major decision or a major purchase or something like that, give it 24 hours or...
Yeah, but what do you do in terms of training? What things do you do in your life?
You know, a lot of the times...
Give you that space.
What I do in my training, especially with this one with the restraint, is I look for the keys in others. I bring in admirable friends around me, and I look to them to let me know when it's time. Often to restrain, because like you said, I often can't see it myself.
That's interesting.
And so I know my wife is very good about this, and I've gone through it numerous times. So now I almost know, I can sense it and I can hear it in her tone and in her actions, that it's like, hey, Alex, check back in with yourself. Is there something you need to restrain here? Are you getting a little excessive in one way versus the other?
Well, that's like Carol saying to me, you're up here, buddy.
You're up here.
You
come
down,
to, you know, come down. What did your mother almost say? Come down off the fig tree.
Not off the fig tree.
You know,
off.
Come down. You know? So this one, sometimes for me, I find that because you do get into those modes where everything is go, 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 and it's very hard to look, and this is the value of surrounding yourself with admirable friends, is that, you know, we don't have to be the ones to come up with all the solutions all the time, you know? It's a letting go quality. So let go and allow others to kind of be your guide.
Well, in the big picture, you're letting go to your own ego and saying, there's others here that can help me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a tremendous exercise.
And that plays right into my gratitude today when I was talking about my coworker. We were having a birthday party like we often do in the department. And it was for the department chair, so everybody's around, and so they have sweets there. And, of course, I'm trying to restrain from eating sugar because that's my biggest downfall and nemesis. And especially now that I'm getting ready for the race, I'm trying to eat much better. And so it's, here, have a piece of cake. And, you know, and it's like, well, I'll wait, I'll take it back. Oh, no, you know, and it's kind of pushed at you. And my coworker knew that I was working towards this goal this week. And she says to me, you know, don't feel pressured just because, you know, it's a, you know, don't feel pressured into doing it. If you don't want to, it's okay.
Yeah.
And it was like, you're right. I don't want it. And it's okay. Mm-hmm. I was grateful to her for saying that because it really, I was like walking towards it and thinking, I don't want to do this, but I don't want to be disrespectful and not look like I'm one of the gang and, you know, enjoying his little party. But at the same time, she really gave me that admirable friend pep talk that I needed to say, you're right. My inner voice said, don't do it. I should, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we have the use of admirable friends. Now let's get to our individual selves stuff. Well, you use an example here of others, which is good, and so did Alex. But what I want to do is, what about your own practice, your own individual practice? What do you all do? Since we can't say we're all going to give up this and we're all going to give up that, everybody has to make their own particular choices of what they're restraining for, because our lives are all separate in what it is. So What do you all do? And I'm going to leave you this before we take the break here. You know, what do you all do individually as a method to train that space? And we can also go right into the course of your stressors and in particular the addictions that you both have as well. But I don't want to leave that point. Alex and Carol both, I think you've given good examples of the outside, but as well as I do, there's times we're alone.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, and we don't have the benefit of admirable friends. And there has to be a choice made. And I think once we're a full mind and faculty, we pretty much know that the choice of whether we take a pleasure as excess or not is whether it leads us to reliable happiness or stress. Right? That's the delimiting factor. My point is, how do you get to sound mind to make that choice when we're caught in addiction or excess?
Got it.
Great.
All right, let's take a break and we'll come back.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
And we're back, buddy.
We're back.
Talking about restraint.
Talking about restraint and excess. A very real topic that has a gripping effect on our day-to-day. Okay, so let's talk about where we've exercised restraint in our life, and also where the excess has caused us stress. Anybody want to start with let's start with the excess, because I think everybody can relate to the excess. We don't want to come across with all our restraining initially. All right, where's the excess get us?
Where does the excess get us?
Yeah, where's our addictions?
Well, and I think this hasn't changed from 10 weeks ago when we did restraint then.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's sugar. It's like sugar, sweets, eating. I think a lot of people can relate to the eating part of the excess.
No question. Mm-hmm. No question.
I often say there's no 12-step program for sugar. I find it just so seductive. Yeah. And once I start, I can't stop. It's crazy.
And when it comes to the times that you are able to get hold of the excess and get your mind about yourself and make better choices, how do you do that? How's that happen?
Well,
when does it happen? How does it happen? What are your triggers?
I think there's two things that come to mind. First of all, my particular reflective pattern is meditation. So I find that when my meditation practice is on track, that coupled with a sort of like a purpose or maybe a determination, as we said initially.
Yes.
It leads me to make better decisions regarding what to restrain from.
So the purpose gives you make sure your ship is going in the right direction.
Yes.
Makes you aware of that. And the meditation gets you slowing down.
Give me that space that I was talking about.
Faculties, so you can see clearer when the decision comes. Okay.
Yeah, I can echo that. first part is really involving myself in a practice that shifts. So pointing that boat in a direction that says, you know, I'm going to bear myself by putting me in the petri dish. And let's put the microscope on this me thing. And let's look at it. And let's go down, let's focus, and let's not. And that ability to focus that microscope in to really see down into the petri dish is where I use the tools like meditation, contemplation, journaling. That gives me the ability to focus a little bit clearer and see things a little bit more in the moment and as they're going on, and all those different things interacting with each other. Now, I do feel that on the topic of excess, I think anything holds the capacity for excessiveness.
Right. What's that saying? Too much of anything is not
worth it. You know, it's like pick your poison, and you know we could bring five people in here, and there would be 1,000 different things that we all find excessive. But go a little bit deeper and say, okay, well, what are the things that I'm overly excessive about, and drill down on those a little bit more. You have the ability to be excessive about anything, but what is it you are excessive about, and go down into those a little bit. For me, if you can implore me to bring the talents back into it a little bit, when we talk about our natural behaviors, one of my top five is a maximizer. And as a maximizer, you know, good isn't good enough. I want it to be the best. And a lot of times, I can become a little... Which is a form of excess. And if I don't keep it in check, it goes haywire.
So
and
you need to calibrate
that,
it.
Oh, and when that talent goes haywire, I mean, it's you know, that's when you definitely need to bring yourself in, find some quiet space, really sit down and really let that sucker just go on its own and just observe it, because it'll go wild.
Well, while you're on that, can I use my example and do some true confessions, because Carol knows this one. You know, we went out and we bought hammocks for camping.
Yes.
And they're inexpensive hammocks, but when I got into the hammocks, there's all kinds of suspension systems. Okay. So look at you. If they could only see you shaking your head.
I'm rolling my eyes and shaking my head. Everybody else.
So
there,
I investigated every suspension system there was, you know, to find out the optimal suspension system. You know, because you're supposed to line up the hammock equidistant from the trees, make sure that it's level left and right, certain angle of descent.
My, how far we've come from just sleeping in trees, huh?
I know. And here I am saying the whole thing is just to lay and relax, swinging in a tree.
Continue.
That's all. But go ahead.
Oh, no, I don't mind it.
No, go
you
ahead.
You can't hurt me.
And this is where the YouTube, this is where
the
bane of our existence, because he went and he looked, and this is like this whole group that's like maximizes.
Yeah. And I went to having, you got these rings for climbing rings, so you can actually adjust them like a belt instead of hooks with carabiners. And then there's also a thing called a whoopee sling, which I've come in touch with. But Carol doesn't know I ordered a couple of whoopee slings.
You better not.
To adjust the hammocks. But it's a classic case, Alex. It's just like you're trying to be excellent. You're trying your best to do the best of anything, and you lose total focus.
Well,
you just completely lose it.
And I'll even pair it up with another one. So my number one is a relator. I love going deep into a, you know, conversation, relationship. And I can't tell you how many times I've been burned by letting my relator get the best of me and become excessive. There are certain times when I don't need to go deep with certain relationships, and I end up bearing, I become too authentic,
right,
and bear my whole soul. And I look back and I say, why would you go that far?
Well, there's your journal, because what's the allure? You see, there's your journal entry. And just like mine, I had to zero down on that hammer.
You ever crank a screw? Anybody out there ever crank a screw one turn too many?
That's a maximizer. That's a metaphor of a maximizing activity. But, you know, you have to ask, what's the allure or what's the drawback? Because if you don't look back through this and really reflect upon it, you're not going to change your behavior. You are the monkey or the Pavlovian dog.
You bring me right back to when the question before the break was, what am I doing in my own practice? And when that shift, in that shift of the boat being able to reflect and look at myself in the petri dish, you have to be okay with the with the slight, maybe they're not flaws, but the slight imperfections, the mistakes that are occurring, you have to be okay with those because that's the opportunity to reflect on something. How often do we reflect on all the great things we've done? I mean, where does that get us? You did it, now move on, right? Let's reflect on the things that didn't work out so well and see what went on there.
Well, that's the authenticity part, isn't it?
The mistake, the stress.
Looking at it for what it was and saying,
you got to be okay.
But you have to live with it when it's happening. I remember, sitting there on the hammock, thinking about the suspension systems this weekend while I was relaxing, feeling stressed that the one I had wasn't the right one. And then I just let go and I relaxed and sat in the hammock. But I was sitting there aware of the stress. So my practice at that point was, why? What is it? You're like shaking, thinking about stuff. And let alone in a beautiful hammock. And you saw the setting. We're on a lake. I'm thinking about suspension systems. Right? Mm-hmm. So, but I had to turn into that stress at that point. Recognize it before I'd ever get to the allure and then let it go. And say, this is not the right time and place to be dealing with this. Let it go. If you're not aware of your stress associated with these cravings, well, let's just take a gross form of a person addicted to gambling, right? Mm-hmm. When the buzzers are ringing and they're sitting there trying to win, or they're on their way in to the park and park the car and going into it, do you think they're aware that they're going to lose a bunch of money? No. They're right in the middle of it all. Lured in, and what's your practice at that point? Do they think there was stress associated with it? Is that really fun? Is that really enjoyable when you boil it down?
So my practice now. So now, if we can kind of expand the practice and look at it from a macro sense, so all this training, all this looking in, reflecting, does exactly what you said. Allows me to see in the moment. I actually get feelings in my body that I know to kind of be like a trigger.
Stressful.
To say, it's a tingling, a stressful, a tightness.
Right.
That says, hold up. And it allows me to almost, in a weird sort of way, your eyeballs just do kind of a 180. Right. And they kind of turn right back.
It's your first line of defense, isn't it?
And often, you're turned inwards, looking at yourself, but you're continuing on the action. So things are still, the movie is still playing out, but you're no longer the actor. You've become the director. And now you can then look at the actor and say, what's he doing? Why is he doing this? Where can I bring him now in a more skillful direction to play out this movie? And so from a beginning to end, that's where the practice eventually goes, is to being able to see that as it's happening. And then to also reflect afterwards. And then, you wait for the next time.
Well, I was talking to the sister today at the monastery about was how I had learned with my current teacher to make meditation pleasurable. And she kind of looked at me and kind of knew that was a turning point, that I learned through the breath how to make it a pleasurable experience in and of itself, and making that my objective, almost like an explorer. She called me an explorer. You like exploring? I said, yeah. And he taught me how to use the breath and feeling the different picture images and using your perceptions of breath more than just air coming in and out of your nose. I started visualizing the air coming through my skin. All had very calming, pleasurable effects on less stress, more calming. And to me, having tasted those feelings and sensations from your body and feeling good about just being, Carol, your word, self-pacified, that to me is something that experientially, once you do that, that helps you say no to the feelings associated with waiting for that Amazon package to come in. Or is there some suspension system I hadn't figured out? I got to watch another YouTube video. Yeah, I mean, can you feel the water? The water is, shaking under one guise.
Well, when you're at the whim of any external sensory pleasure, that could...
And plus,
you
can shop whatever your heart desires. If you want the best of anything, you can go research it on the internet. So, but when do you actually say no to this stuff? And just saying no is, I don't see it possible in my life. I've got to be honest with you. If I didn't have this alternate pleasure, I don't see how I could ever put a governor on any of these excesses.
We have to compare it to something. You would have to try it once. in order to know what the opposing feeling would be or experience would be. Or else how would you ever know?
Right. And I think the stopping and the logic and the journaling and the discussions with admirable friends, they're extremely helpful in the process.
Yes, great resources.
To help you go from gross levels of attachments or addictions to more subtle levels. But ultimately, don't we have to get comfortable in our bodies and in our time space?
I mean, most people will agree that it's a practice of trial and error. But let's take that first bit, the trial. That's action. You're right. Going to have to do something.
Not read about it. Because reading
and
about
the trial and error
and restraint is not enough.
You know, there's no set in stone how many times you're going to have to trial and error something.
Right.
So you have to come up with skillful solutions to then put on trial.
But be honest about what your real allure is to those, or you can never get to the source of why you're doing it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Carol, you ultimately have to get to what is the allure for the sugar.
I know.
And that's not, I don't think there's one answer, because I think there's multiple answers to that question, because it's point in time, isn't it?
Yes.
Sometimes you're attracted to this, and it might be the allure, could be that you looked in the mirror and you were feeling lousy about your body, I don't know, and you all of a sudden said, I'm going to eat anyways. You know, you have to investigate a lot, don't you?
Sure, and it's not just one thing. Like you said, it's like the layers of an onion. You know, you might find one experience that
right,
can relate
to that. Right,
because
the symptom is not the actual cause.
Yes, another one. Because given any circumstances that you're put into is the reaction you're going to have regarding that.
I mean, I've watched you work with sugar under different scenarios almost your entire adult life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like I've got to beat the sugar habit and I've got to say no to sugar. I think it's a little more complicated than that.
Yes.
It takes a little more honesty and observation as to when did I grab the sugar, why did I grab the sugar, what were the conditions at play? What were my choices? Who did I have time to talk? What admirable friends did I talk to this about that I would feel comfortable talking about? Was it a non-admirable friend that said, go ahead and have the donut? I like that kind of donut too. Right? You're getting no support with that kind of a friendship.
Mm-hmm.
So then you got to say, well, I got to look at my friendship. And then I got to look at my determination. What is my goal in life? What's my purpose in life? All of these things tie together. And it really boils down to the restraint, the choices.
But it will come down to an emotional choice if you don't have some sort of reflection or
practice,
stop gap measure.
I like what Alex said, learning from your mistakes.
And the toughest part about that isn't the learning from the mistakes. I don't see a downside to that. The toughest part is not beating yourself up over the mistakes or over making
point.
The mistake
yeah.
more
that
than once.
So
Carol, chime in on that one, because I know that's a bugaboo for you.
I mean,
honest to a fault, almost to a point where you say, I'm lousy because I do all these bad things. You know, he said, you've got to learn it at almost separating yourself from the mistake and the action, don't you?
Yeah, there's almost an excessiveness to restraint sometimes where you're trying to, it's almost like trying too hard. You're trying to restrain so much or try to break so much excessiveness that you end up getting down on yourselves because you can't do it all at once.
Well, getting back to your maximizer, there's your perfectionist of yourself.
Right. And
so you can't make a mistake.
I know. But the relator in me says, I want to know. The relator's great because, you know, a lot of these times these talents go externally and we want to point them out there and how these talents affect our external world. But how do I relate to myself? What kind of deep conversation am I having with myself? Relator's number one. That means I can build a pretty deep conversation internally.
It's funny you mention that because one of my clients that this week I talked to was describing our service. And what he said is, I think you've taught me how to be my own psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, what do you mean by that? And he said, because I think what's happening is with the skills that you've shown me and the tools that you've provided allow me to shift from, you know, almost like a doctor looking at myself and my own actions outside of myself, which was kind of an interesting analogy.
He's talented.
He spoke to the tools that he'd been working on that allowed him to do that.
Refresh my memory. He's a real big journal guy.
Journals every week, and I speak to him every week. You know, I'm his accountability buddy every week on his journal, and I just go through the drill, and he, you know, wants to tell me what he did, where his stresses were, what his actions were, where he was, you know, used goodwill, blah, blah, blah. And we go through the drill every week. And, you know, this young lad is he's from Europe, and he's really improved his golf game as I've coached him through some of this stuff. And I said, well, was it your physical swing or your mental? And he said, it was a combination of the two. I said, but talk about the mental. What did you get out of all this discussion? And he explained it. He said, I feel like I'm almost a psychologist of my own activity. And I thought that was interesting because, you know, a lot of times we look for an admirable friend, in some cases a friend of any kind that would help us, guide us. But aren't we ultimately left to our own devices? I mean, I can't teach him how to be skillful. I can only give him tools to be skillful.
And you know, there's a little bit about me that says, if it came down to it, I would want to be left with my own devices. I would want to fall on me, you know.
How about you, Carol? Would you want to be on your own with that? Do you feel that?
I do.
Ultimately, it is up to you?
Yes. I think that the dependable part, practical, dependable part of the responsibility, self-responsibility is key.
You know,
I like that. That's
like bearing your own cross. You're going to have to carry it. You know, this is something you're going to have to go through. You're going to have to carry it. Isn't that the lesson that was being taught, was that we all have to carry it?
Right. And that's the whole concept of the Christian faith as the Holy Spirit.
Right.
Right. It's with us, and we have to, you know, what's that, the footprints were there all along.
Yes.
And he gave you.
Yeah.
I was there to support you, but you
when
couldn't
you
make
saw
a choice.
One set of footprints, that's when I was carrying you.
Yeah. So it is, and of course we learned from the Buddhist nuns a lot about the Asian way of approaching individual responsibility. So the blend of psychology and when are you your own psychologist. But I thought that was interesting that you could actually look at your own life alone. So you didn't need the psychologist at that point. You were your own psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, where's my actions? What would be... and one time, you know, he even said during the coaching sessions, a lot of times when I'm on the golf course and I have to make a choice, he said, I say to myself, what would Buddy look at? How would Buddy look at this situation?
Well,
In the heat of the moment,
you are with yourself. Now, others do contribute to your training and contribute to your life, but when an action's taking place, that's you.
Right.
You know, there's one person in play there, you know.
Now, let me ask you, we've talked about tools to help with the restraint. What do you think, and, you know, part of the two resolutions in our program, actually, there's three main resolutions after we get to the strategy, and that's restraining our sensory activity, which we've been talking about predominantly today. The other two resolutions is to restrain from ill will and restrain from harmful behavior. How do you think, now I know ill will and goodwill is a previous subject in the Ideal Mind Qualities, but how do you think that those practices of restraining from ill will and restraining from harmful behavior, how do you think they play in this whole scheme? Do you think that affects your ability?
I do. Well, I think the ill will part of it is more of the restraining.
You have 2 minutes, by the way. So.
Restraining from thoughts and verbal, whereas the excess was the, it seems to be more material.
Well, let me go the other way. Do you ever think that you'd have sugar because you had ill will for somebody? Would you ever grab a sugar if you were in a relationship problem with somebody that you didn't like?
Absolutely.
There you go. That's the point.
Have I ever sat alone on my couch with a tub of chocolate ice cream?
Oh.
Right?
I can't even count the times.
So.
Sure. Emotion plays a very
And how much do you think eating is harmful to us? So if we think about, these are all related, aren't they? Harmlessness, ill will, sensory experience.
Right.
They all.
Who could cultivate those mind qualities, they could really free us up.
That's the bottom line. They're all related.
You know, just a quick story real quick, just to let you know that this can be done on any level. I picked up my daughter today, 13 years old, picked her up from school, and she had a friend sitting on a bench that was crying and looked obviously upset. So she gets in the car and she says, yeah, you know, I felt real bad. My friend was upset. I said, oh, she was upset? Why is she upset? Well, she got a very bad grade and she can't participate in the something. And of course, me, I go and I say, well, you know, I'm sure it was her actions that led her to that. And so I go down that route and I look at her. And I said, did you, so you just kind of fed into her and just said, oh, you'll be better. I'm sorry about that. She goes, you know what? She looked like she was suffering pretty bad. I just felt it was best just to be there for her. And so she restrained from any sort of speech or action that was going
that was really
to compound anything.
Part.
I was a 13-year-old that knew how to do that.
That's
so
empathy.
The capacity is there.
How sweet.
That's empathy. That's being there in the moment. We got to cut it short, folks. This thing flew tonight.
It did.
Restraint's a great subject, especially when it's in the context of ordinary living and how it helps us.
And I love having
balls.
Alex on. He just contributes so much to our conversation.
It's easy to talk.
I mean, I do love speaking with you on Tuesday nights, but when Alex comes, the whole mix gets...
Here we go. She hates being alone with me, folks.
This is it. Alex could be a regular now. Look out.
All right. Thanks. Until next week.
Thank you, everybody.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is, what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.